Okay.
Welcome to the Holy Spirit's Curriculum of Joy podcast. My name is Wanako Oberhuber, and I'm your host. My guest today is Kaya Tashir. Hi.
Hello, Wanako. How are you today? It's great to be here. Thank you for the invite.
You're very welcome. I'm so happy to have you here. And I'd like to start with a question that I love asking because I get so wonderful answers from it. How did you come to see the world the way you do today?
Through challenges, through tough times, and the results of what happens in the process of working through those. When I was young, I went through a period where I didn't feel loved. And I remember going outside and being outside by myself. I was outside for a long time. And I was looking up at the sun and the clouds. This is in southern Nevada. And I thought, something has to be real here. What is real? I'm 7 years old. What is real? And the song, Row, Row, Row Your Boat, came into my mind. And I started singing it. And the part that says, life is but a dream, always stuck. And so I started to look at life as though it's a dream. And if it's a dream, what does it mean that I can do in the dream? Well, I had a grandfather who was a dream walker, and he taught me that don't be afraid of dreams. Whenever something happens that you don't like, just change your mind. Write the story. Make it different. And so that's what I began to do. I began to write the story, then make it different. So at 7, 8, 9, when things would go wrong, I would go in and say, okay, this happened. And I did this and I got really upset. Why did I get really upset? Did I have to get really upset? And I started looking at if I could do something else. And as I grew older, I started to ask, well, if there's God, then he ought to be able to help me, right? And I began that process. And really, it was spirit. It was spirit right from the very beginning and asking and saying, what is it right now in this moment that I need to understand? And then sit and wait and allow the teaching to come forward, allow the answers to roll into the mind and change how I was looking at things. And that began the process of dreaming my life, of realizing that life is something more than what's on the surface of what we're told as children, what we're told as adults. And so if that's true, that means there's a whole lot out there to explore and to look at and to get excited about. And so it's been a journey, and I've had lots of challenges in my life and lots of experiences to have the opportunity to use this. And I keep thinking there's a lot to life. And sometimes the challenges I had as a child and a young adult, well, the memories will come back as I get older. And then I remember, oh, that's time to face my fears. And as I began to look at the process of, oh, this caused that fear, this is how I'm reacting when someone does this, when they get angry, or when someone does something that reminds me of someone that hurt me. And I have to realize that's not the same person. This isn't the same situation, but I'm reacting. You know, that person that showed up is only 10%. He's the teacher in that moment. He's bringing that 10% to my awareness, says, because I must be ready for the lesson of the other 90%. So now that I am 20, so now that I am 32, so now that I'm in my 40s and 50s and now 60s, when something comes up about it, okay, what's the wisdom that I will get this time around that circle of life to understand and grow the because now I'm ready for it and now I can understand it. Where before, on this level, I wasn't ready for it. That's why it's coming around again. So I think there's no accidents. I think we go into a family as a spirit aware of what those challenges are going to be. And we go into it, we have those experiences, we go through those pains. And as we get older, we still keep growing through those pains. And it's all an opportunity to be in spirit, to sit with the spirit and say, teach me, show me, allow me to understand what you want me to know right now, in this moment, in this part of my life, that will help me to move forward. So that's it in a nutshell as to why I have come to believe the way I believe now. That's the process that I use through challenges in life, through going through marriage, going through a divorce, going through being a single parent, going through being a social worker, working with people who are addicted and working with people who were challenged in areas that were causing them not to be able to live the life that they wanted to live and they were struggling. And together we walk through that path, learning and growing, holding each other's hand, helping them to learn and helping me to have compassion and to understand and to not to be a pious, pompous poop. I was so terribly. And so I needed all of those lessons. And I needed that hard road to get rid of the stubbornness that I had gained by going into the family that I went into. So there's no mistakes. There's no mistakes at all. And we come out of it perfected in the light, and we come out of it, well, in the process, we're actors and reactors in the process, acting and reacting with each other and helping each other learn and grow together. Or sometimes we have a relationship where we absolutely have to turn away to stand up for our self-esteem and our sense of who we are, and they go through that loss. And sometimes it's reversed. And so each time we go through a challenge, it's an opportunity to have that, to dispel the illusion and dispel the, mine was the big Cinderella illusion. I was going to grow up and marry Prince Charming and life was going to be perfect. And that was really a huge illusion for me to work through. And I'm better for it. I don't ever regret having those challenges. I don't ever regret the ups and downs. I don't ever regret the misunderstandings, the things of unlove and the time of, I was avoidant at a time. So when I ran instead of facing, and then I learned to face. And by the time I was in my 40s, life was really a lot better. But the whole time, I was never left alone. The light, the spirit, and knowing that I am a child of that light, a child of that spirit, that we walk together as human beings in our relationships, whether they go really good or whether they go awry, we are still walking each other home. And walking a path that takes us to the point that says, you are enough. You are more than enough. You have the ability and the capacity to do what you do because you are a child of God. That light is in you and you are in that light. And really, it's one. It's one in unity. And the spirit, for me, bridged that gap so that I could make that discovery. And now that's what I do. I share it with people. Whenever I can open my mouth and share it. So that's the beginning. Now, how does it start? It's something that I have contemplated and thought about. And it started because of a choice between anger and understanding. And so making that choice of anger, or making the choice of understanding, or making a choice of anger and pride, or making the choice of understanding and compassion. One path leads to life, the other path leads to spiritual death. In the illusion, we know it's not really a spiritual death, but it feels like it. And when they come out of that illusion, at any time in their lives, we can choose to know and to seek the light and to seek life and to seek spirit. And so I guess that's a long answer to your question. I'll pause and take a breath if you have questions.
I think I told you in advance you can take your time. I don't know if you remember that. Anyways, you can speak as long as you want. If you have more you would like to say before I start asking questions, you're
okay. Okay. I think for me, it was asking to know love. I want to know love because I felt unloved. And believing that the answer that I am love that I received at 7 from singing Row, Row, Row Your Boat and going through that illusion. I believe the answer. And because I believe the answer, and also because as a child, I was sick I remember being a year and a half in my crib and not breathing, and it was night and not being able to breathe. And this woman, she was a spirit, came and sat by my crib. And she comforted me and she said, "It's okay. It's not your time to go. You're going to be okay." And she comforted me. I settled down. And then when I was settled down, she left and I started crying because she was so full of love. And I recognized that because I wanted to go with her. I wanted to be with love. And then the next thing that happened, I was 4 years old. And I was abused, and I left my body and I went flying. And I was flying through the trees and through the forest, and it was beautiful. And I felt love. I felt love in nature. And so I had a taste of love by the time I was 7 and was wanting more love and singing Row, Row Your Boat. And it was very nice. It was very nice. And then again, at 26, I had a near-death experience. And I went on the other side. And I was told that my life was done. And that I could stay if I wanted to. And while standing at the judgment bar, I saw my life. And there was these areas that were blackened out. And I asked, I said, "What are those areas? How come I can't see those?" And he said, "You're not ready for them yet to have them revealed." And so I asked, "Well, why are they there?" And he said, "Those are from the traditions of men. And those are how you will learn if you go back." And I looked at him and I said, "I don't want to go back. I want to stay here." And He took me to this mountain, and there was mountains and mountains. And he said, "If you go back, all these people, there were thousands and thousands and thousands, I couldn't count them, of people covering these mountains. If you go back, your life will affect each one of these people." And then he began to explain to me that each act of kindness in our life goes from us to the people we are kind to. And they feel that kindness, and they are kind and spread that kindness, and it keeps going out. And so from one act of kindness, we have oceans of waves of kindness that occur. And then he turned to me and he said, "One life full of kindness is extraordinary And it, every normal person, every person on earth can do this and flood the earth with waves and waves of kindness in one normal life. And I was so surprised. I had no idea. And he said, that's how love spread. So he was teaching me that if I have love, that love needs to be spread and love needs to be shared so that all people can have the opportunity to give and receive love. It's like, let's do an example, a heaven and hell. We're at a hotel, we go into a banquet room, and all of these people have a bowl of soup, and they have very, very long spoons. And it's so long, you can't take the spoon and dip it in the soup and feed yourself because the elbow won't bend according because of the length of the spoon. It won't fit. And so in the first room, they call hell, people were starving because they couldn't eat. Then, now let's go look at heaven. And when we go into the banquet room where there's heaven, we open the doors and go in. And it's the same scenario, same soup, same bowls, same long spoons. The only difference is they figured out how to dip up the spoon and feed their neighbor. And so heaven is the sharing of love. And so I thought, well, that must be heaven on earth too. It's the sharing of love and the sharing of kindness. And so then he said to me, will you go back? And I said, no. I want to stay here with you. And then he took me down back to this room where the judgment bar was, and he showed, and there was people that my ancestors that had come before me, and ancestors and children that would follow afterwards. And down the ramp in this, there was a, in this vision, this after near-death experience, there was seven kids that were waiting, and he walked me down and he said, if you go back, these children will have a mother. And I asked him why, and he said that they had been aborted and they were supposed to come to my family. And I said, and I started crying, and I said, I'll go back. And so I came back just for the love, just for the ability to be a mother. Because I was told before I wouldn't have any children. And now I had had two. But now when I was coming back, there were seven more that were waiting. And I thought, I don't want to miss that. I don't want to miss that opportunity to love, to share that love, and to give the love, and to receive the love. And so I came back. These kind of experiences have continued to go on. Where you have whisperings of the spirit or knowing what to do when and how and what to say, they have continued in my life. And I'm not unusual. I really believe all of us have this capacity to be still and to just allow ourselves to let go of the illusion, to let go of the fear, and know that these things that happen are innate for human beings, that they are part of our very nature because we are spirit and we are with spirit and spirit is with us. So much love and so much joy comes from these moments and understanding. It could be as simple as, I've lost my keys. Where are my keys? And then you have a picture in your mind and you go there and it says, not quite there, go over there, just a little more to the left. And there they are. You know, there's so many little miracles that could happen that we miss out on when because we're afraid, or we miss out on because the world tells us that it's not real, or the world doesn't acknowledge the true nature of human beings. The true nature of us is amazing. We have the capacity to, I'm also a Reiki master. And I teach people how to use the energy to heal themselves. And it's amazing. We have the capacity to comfort each other and to heal each other and to help each other. And it's all this energy, all this life force energy, all of this spirit that comes together. It's called chi. It's called life force energy. You know, it's called different things to the world. I just absolutely love that there's so much out there. There's so much to learn, so much for myself to learn. It feels like when I ask a question and I get an answer, there's 10 more questions. There's 10 more questions that are begging for answers. And like, oh my goodness, this is amazing. So life has been pretty good. And it's all because of realizing that we are taught that there's not this kind of love. There's not this kind of love available to us. And we're challenged to know, when we are challenged by no love, that actually opens the door for us to find love. Excuse me, I'm a little dry. Let me take a little drink.
Yeah, well, I might as well ask. I mean, so maybe others have that in mind too. Did you have an impression who that was showing you everything in your near-death experience?
I do know who it was. It was Christ. It was my understanding of Christ. Excuse me. And then in my crib, it was my ancestor. It was my my great-grandmother, great-great-grandmother, Pauline. Her name was Paulina Olivares. She was my grandfather's, let's see how that connection goes. She was my grandfather's mother's mother. So my great-grandmother, great-great-grandmother. It's amazing. I know when my dad died that one of his grandfathers came. So we acknowledge in my family that our ancestors are with us and they're helping us along in our life. And they're real. And even when somebody passes, they're still there. They're not dead to us. We are still connected heart to heart, and that we can talk to them and can receive that information back from them. And they can walk in our dreams, and we can walk with them in our dreams and learn and grow. I am grateful for that part of my mom's family. On her dad's side, there is a medicine line. And my grandpa, my maternal grandfather was kind to share some of the things and to share, oh yeah, that's real. Because I would tell him, Grandpa, I go flying. Nobody believes me. It's okay. It's real. He would say things like that. And he would just assure me, or I'd ask him about my dreams, and he would tell me how to walk in my dreams and how to be, because I had some nightmares as a kid, and he told me how to stand up to the dragons and how to turn around. And he said, just raise your arm to the square and cast them out. Oh, that's easy. And so here I am, 9 years old in my dreams, raising my arm to the square. But it was amazing. It was amazing growing up that way. It's amazing knowing. And then I got in the world and I was afraid to share it, because when we share that kind of light, people don't understand it. And so I felt I had to be very quiet about it for a long time. And when I started going to school for counseling, they said, oh no, you don't talk about that stuff in counseling. And I thought, I believe in being holistic. So how can we be holistic if we don't talk about it or allow other people to talk about that part of them? Because the spirit is part of our inner connections, mind, body, spirit, and heart, work together to be whole, to create our wholeness. And if we take part of it out, we can't be whole. So, yes. There was...
I actually composed a song about that topic and wrote a text of what should you do if you're having that right situation of knowing something that's true and people are saying it's all wrong, right? I was asking that question because I was like, what should I do with this, you know?
Yeah.
But I've come to see it very differently in the meantime, because actually, like we were speaking of at the beginning, you know, one mind, there is only one mind. So actually everyone understands us. We just don't see it.
Right. Right. Exactly. Even if someone doesn't see it, I find that they may not be aware. And so I like to work within the parameters with them where they're at. I don't ever want to make someone feel less than because they don't understand. And if someone asks me a question, I'll let them ask it once and say, and not give an answer and wait. And if they are very curious and they really want to know, they will ask again and maybe again. And then I'll begin to feed a little information and talk to them a little bit more about it so that they can feel comfortable in receiving. I don't like to overwhelm and throw them into a tailspin. It's not, I've learned the hard way that that's not what you do. So, yeah, I've had a lot of lessons. It seems the biggest thing is to not be afraid of love. Because when we're afraid of love, fears come in. And when we decide to face love or face the fear of receiving love, we can begin to heal, because love will heal all of our sorrow. It will heal all of our pain. It will wipe away our tears. It will help us to understand that we are part of a greater whole. And we just not be afraid of this, to not be afraid to open our arms and embrace each other. And I think of this particularly after COVID, where it separated us, and it separated us from that kind of communication of being one through love. How do you judge that? What do you do? How do you gauge of who to hug and not to hug? I think we can't always hug everyone, but we can send love to them heart to heart. And if they feel that love, then they're open. They're curious. They want to know. They, you know, little kids will come and sit by you and they'll just look in your eyes because you shine. So we can't be afraid of love, even though we are. And even when we have our challenges that we work through that open us up to deeper understanding, so we can let those walls down and get them down so that we can open the door and walk through and allow others to come through so that we can have heart-to-heart connections. Spirits, that's where spirit and heart work together. Mind and heart is, mind and heart can be at conflict with each other. And so the way we tie them together is to imagine a golden rod from our head, and then a golden rod, circular rod from our heart, and bring them both together in front of us and hold them together with intention. And when we hold them together with intention, we can speak the intention we want, the intent to be able to love. And then the mind and the heart will work together and bring that about. Yeah, nice little formula. Thank you, Grandpa.
It's so beautiful that you had that opportunity to be acknowledged in these things when you were a kid.
Yeah.
Because I know that I had these things, a lot of the things were seen as dreams, right? In my that I was that I thought felt were real. And so it was so I actually turned towards and that my family, I think, used those things a lot also to produce art or bring about
Yeah.
art. So that was the positive way about these things,
Oh, you
just to
bet.
see it as art, right? But that's not the whole story.
That's an itching, that's like a little edging toward the truth, or
Yes.
opening the door a little bit so the truth could peek out.
So you were allowed to call it fantasy or make believe or invention or whatever, right? But to and the little bit of spirituality would shine through, but it was like, it's very interesting to see how this you have to gain confidence in the whole thing first. And then you
Yeah.
have to gain confidence that someone else might understand you. Maybe there's people out there who understand you, right? Then you might discover a book or another that confirms there are people who have the same
Yes.
thoughts. And
Yes.
by coincidence, since you were speaking of this medicine tradition in your family, one of the first books to affirm that it's not fantasy, all of the things that I feel, right, was a book about shamanism. So I was very
Wow.
blessed to encounter that book at a time
Wow.
where I needed
Right.
it.
Speaking of books, I remember reading Jonathan Livingston Seagull, and it was like that gave permission. That gave permission to be free, to be who we are, and to fly. And I thought, boy, I got a lot of work to do. But I appreciated that door being opened to be able to start to share. And I found that people that were more into holistic things seemed to resonate more with what I was doing. So by 73 in college, we were going to this one place. It was called Humpty Dumpty's, and it was actually organic food cafe in Las Vegas. And they served sandwiches with sprouts and all different kinds of things, and salads and raw food. And it was really my first introduction to all of that. And the person that took me just saw how much I relished it and enjoyed it. And he said, "You can do this all the time, you know." So I took a menu home. I asked for the menu and I took it home. And I started sharing the love. I started putting stuff together. So that was the beginning of some of those shifts and some of those changes for me. It was nice to learn and grow with the people that are have been put in my path along the way. The positive people and the negative people, they were all important. They were all very important to expanding who I am and helping me understand the challenges of what do you do when someone hates you, and how do you let go, and how do you send love, and how do you untether the evil that was in me? How do I shift that negativity from being in the victim mode? How do I move from that into self-empowerment? And so that's what I was doing for a while, learning how to do that. And then getting to the point where, oh, there's other people here on the bridge in the same place I am. Oh, this is wonderful. How did they get here? So you start sharing stories and learning from each other. And then pretty soon you find that you go from just being self-empowered, that you start to become empowered with other people. You move into community. And then after you move into community, it's like, well, what can I do about it? How can I give back? How can I be part of the solution instead of part of the challenge and the problem? And learning how to do that. And all of a sudden, there's a whole new skill set that opens up. not just in psychology and just not in spirituality, but in how to work with people to get what you do out there to be understood, that it's a, that there's this service that you can offer. And so that's been a process of growth too. So there, we have lots of opportunities to learn and grow. We have lots of opportunities to be able to find the light and allow it to shine. And then we bump into corners of ourselves that are still dark, and we go, oh, I didn't know that was there. And then figure it out again. I think that when we get done doing that, we may be done. We may be done. It may be time to transform and leave, to drop the glove of the body and go to the other side. I wonder, in my mind, sometimes I wonder, what's the graduation? Is that the graduation? Is death the graduation to step through the door back to the other side? I don't know. We'll have to see. Definitely. We'll have to see.
I don't know the answer to that question either.
It's just something to think about, you know. I know that there is another side. I know that. As far as, and I do know there's this huge library over there. I was taken and shown this library, and it was huge. The shelves were huge from top to bottom, all the books in the world, and our spirits can float. So we could float up to the top and get the book on the top and open it and go through it. Oh, that was wonderful. Put it back. We have so many capacities in spirit. So I think I'll play in that library for a while when I get to the other side. I like learning. Oh.
Yeah, maybe I'd like to go into a subject, because you said you love learning. What is your take on early childhood education?
Oh, okay. My take on early childhood education is it's an opportunity for children's minds to be formed and to be molded. And I think that there's some positives about early childhood education, and there's some negatives. The positives are socialization, particularly where you have families that both parents are working in these days. I think the best education comes from parents. If they are parents, particularly if they are parents who will sit and talk to their children, like when you're three and you're going through, why? What's this? How come? And they'll talk to them, and they'll teach them, and they'll take them and show them the bugs, and they'll take them to the beach, and they'll take them to the forest, and they will help them to learn. I think that's excellent. I used to help in one of my son's classes when he was growing up, and when he was in first grade, second grade too. And I helped with reading. Also, having studied some of Jungian's metaphors and stories and archetypes, I understood a little bit about that. And so as I'm listening to these stories that are being read to the kids, I also realized that they were being taught things that were not in line with our family's values as far as honoring ancestors and honoring families and parents. And so I homeschooled. I pulled my kids out and homeschooled. And we had a blast for as long as I could do that. One thing that happens in early education and elementary is they get stuck in the pattern of only go so deep into the subjects. They never learn how to dig. And so what we would do is go to the library, and I would say, 10 books, pick any 10 books you want, I don't care if you know the words or not. If you're attracted to the pictures, get it. And so one son picked 10 Kevin and Hobbes books, which was fine. He was in third grade, and Kevin and Hobbes was written at an eighth grade level. So he learned how to read off of Kevin and Hobbes. And then when he went in high school, he had to go back to high school. We had a change in our life. And when he went into high school, he was ditching PE by going to the library to study Einstein. And so I got a call from the principal, and he said, I don't know what to do with your son. He's ditching PE. He's going in the library to study Einstein. I usually put kids in the library for detention when they skip their classes. And so we talked about it, and I just made the decision he was old enough to come out of school and study on his own. And so we did that, and he took his GED when he was 16, and he passed, and he went on. So I tend to believe that kids need to be free to follow what's in their heart, about what they're attracted to in topics and in studies, so that they can develop and prepare for their adult life. And so as much as I could do that with my children, I did, to give them that freedom to study. And what we had a guideline, we study what's in the earth, on the earth, above the earth, and below the earth, and anything in the cosmos around. And so that was our guideline for studies. And it had to match that criteria, which meant anything in the library was open for them to study and to learn. I never said to him, oh, that's a book on chemistry. I don't think you're ready for that yet. I never did that. So they brought home all kinds of books, and we talked about it. And we explored the world through books, and we explored the world through going out into nature. And we explored the world by going into our community, into the small businesses, and telling them we're homeschoolers, and asking if they had a time we could come back and they could talk to them about what they did and show them around. And we did that. And the kids loved it. One of the sons was hired to work in the nursery 2 weeks after we did that. And he worked in the nursery like 4 hours a week. He'd go in and help and come back with new knowledge. And so those kind of opportunities, they don't get in the school system. And I think that as much as we can expose them and work with and around and through, the better. Because we each have different situations and have to consider what our situation is and what we can do as parents and what we can't do as parents. So that's my whole spiel on schools. I almost dropped out of high school, but when I got in college, I soared. Because I was able to dig deeper than what the schools allowed us to do. So part of that was me too. I wanted to dig deeper. For my learning, I love to dig deep. I love to know how come and why and how, and how does it work and how does it go together and what does that mean and how does it apply to us or how doesn't it apply to us? How does this make a better world? How doesn't it make a better world? How does it improve? As part of why I got into psychology and counseling and spirituality was because I saw possibilities of learning new ways to open minds and to open our hearts and start to become a more holistic humankind or human being. And understanding that spirit is very much a part of that. Heart is very much a part of it. Our relationships, our mind and body is very much part of it. Right now I'm working with trauma and anxiety and grief and loss and relationships in the community where I am. It's a small community. And then I'm working worldwide on the internet, on video, doing video sessions. And I'm finding that being able to have that knowledge, that holistic knowledge, is helping me to help people. It's vital. It's vital people have permission to be who they are totally as a total purpose, as a total person. And yes, it helped me. I just think that when we do this, we come to know who we are. We come to not be afraid of love. We come to know that love will heal us, and love will wipe away our tears, and it will help us realize that the son and the daughters of God, us, are not made to be afraid, that we are built for love, and that salvation comes to us, and we welcome it when we open to that love. And it's not only an individual arrival, it's a family arrival, it's a community arrival, and maybe one day it'll be a world arrival. Call me an extreme optimist. I will never give up hoping and feeling and spreading that to people that I come in contact with. We're not stuck. We're not broken. We are light. We are healed. We're already healed. We just have to say yes. 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 I want that love. Yes. I want to be human. Yes. I want to claim my own divinity and my own right to that divinity. Yes. It is mine. It is ours. We are one. We are one with God. So, yeah, I'm passionate about this. I haven't let you talk a lot. Jabber. This is fun, Wonko. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Wonderful, yeah. So let's go into that. You speak about passion, being passionate, and you show it. Now, you were also speaking about how at first you had the impression people wouldn't understand you, you would get to the wrong person, or you'd have negative consequences for being passionate about what is true for you. Now, how did that develop so that you became the person you are today who speaks about it openly? How did that change? How did you come to that?
Oh, my goodness. Well, one of my biggest naysayers came from my own mother. And there came a time in my life that I had to walk away. And when I walked away, I gave myself permission to be who I am, because I didn't feel held down or squished by her anymore. There was a lot of unkind claims. There was a lot of negative talk. There was a lot of half-truths. She'd ask me information, take half-truths, and then put it with a lie, and spin it with a lie, and then my sister would run with it. And there was a lot of destruction that happened in my personal families and in my marriage, a couple of my marriages, because of it. And finally, when I walked away from that relationship, because I was able to see it, I was able to confront her, and she was not willing to stop. And so I made a decision to walk away and to stand on my own feet. And I understood what she was doing was not all in all, in part to how she felt about me, but it was also in part to how she felt what she would look like in society if I was free to be who I am. So she was worried about how it would reflect on her. And I realized we needed to have a parting of ways. So I did that. And when I did that, I was able to stand in truly in who I am as a person. And I did not hate her. I still sent her love from my heart. We just couldn't be together. And so that was the beginning. That was the beginning of really being free and really being able to stand up and share and be who I am and share what my knowledge is and to begin to heal people. And it was a sad thing. And yet it was a releasing thing that has led to a lot of joy too. So thank you for the question. It's not an easy one for me to give to you. But yet I'm grateful because it is what opened my door, is to get, it got me totally out of the negativity. And it helped me to finish crossing the bridge into my self-empowerment and into other empowerment. And it also opened the door for me to talk about my visions and to talk about the things that happened to me in a near-death, in my near-death experience, and to share with others who were learning and seeking that there is a way to heal from trauma, there is a way to heal from abuse, and there is a way to find love. It's possible when you can do it. So, yeah.
Thank you for answering that question. It's a very important question for me too. And I also realize that I've continuously changed my mind about it to come to the conclusion that it still takes a moment, right? A little while when someone is a naysayer turns up and says stuff. But I do usually tend to decide to speak my truth, even when that comes up. But it takes a moment. Sometimes I'm a little shocked and can't accept it very quickly. But I get there. So
it
yes,
definitely takes courage.
So it's very, very powerful to be able to do that and to say, okay, I'm passionate about children. I'm passionate about childhood education. I'm passionate about homeschooling like you said, and so on and so forth, right? Passionate about the freedom of the human being to choose what they want to pursue, right? And I think you were saying that should start in early childhood and throughout education and not only once you're a grown-up, because then you don't know how to do it anymore, right? If you weren't doing it all the time.
Right. And in doing that, you realize the magnificence of who you are. I have a son that decided he wanted to learn Japanese. He did. And he decided he wanted to learn Spanish. And because he knew how to dig deep, he was speaking Spanish in 6 weeks. I was totally amazed, just totally amazed at how much paying attention to these little things matters, because they really open up how ingenious the human being is and how capable we are of doing things that seem insurmountable when we go through the regular school system. And it's just because the skills that we needed weren't there. You know, we didn't get to learn that part of who we are. And when we do, it's like, oh, give me my wings. I want to fly. And that's what we can do. We can fly.
Wonderful. Henry, you wanted to say something? Go ahead.
Thank you. Hello. I was picking up on what you were saying, Wanako, about the naysayer. And I wanted to bring up something about that, because I have one on the internet now, and he's 81 years old or 82, I don't know. He's on artificial heart machine that keeps him alive. Mm-hmm. And he's an incredibly eloquent writer, and he's really, really intelligent, and he doesn't believe in the idea of that there is no death, and no death he believes that the death is the end of what he calls life. And I've been writing back and forth to him about like the belief system, and he uses his ideas, and it was like what Wanaka was saying, is that I was kind of shocked by how, well, I'm going to say that way. I don't like the idea of saying it that way because I don't really feel attacked, but I was surprised. And because he calls me naive and religious, and I think, oh, wait a minute, like I've also had, and I don't like talking about it on in public. I'm kind of surprised you don't have a problem with that, but I also have an experience of having gone beyond what I think was death. That's what I call it. And so I can't, in my mind, I can't turn that off. I can't undo that. That doesn't work.
it's
ridiculous for me to go against what I've been showing. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. I can't. So like if people call me a dreamer, well, then I'm a dreamer. I don't care, you know.
Yeah.
And anyway,
sometimes we just need to agree to disagree. And if someone is pointed and forceful about it, then we have the option to disengage or to gracefully back out and disengage.
Yeah.
And if they become a hounder, you have the right to block them.
Okay.
You do.
I hear you, and like these thoughts that you are sharing, I've had them. These are thoughts I've had, and so this is where I wanted to go with this, because let's see.
Yeah.
I hope I'm not taking too much space, Wanako. Is it okay?
It's relevant to the topic we're talking about, so go ahead.
Yes.
Okay. So like I'm thinking, okay, I've asked him in as a being to come into my life to show me my lessons, and
right,
in reverse, he has asked me to come into his to show him his lessons. So to be blocking him, that like spirit is not telling me, like my guidance, I call it my guidance, I don't call it spirit, that's what I call it,
right?
My guidance says, no, you don't have to do that, just
well,
stay with who you are.
Are you able to feel the love toward him and realize him as a teacher and learn and grow through the process?
Yes, I have been using him for that, and it's really amazing, actually.
Okay. It seems like you won't change his mind, and he is not going to change yours, but just through the process of speaking together, and kind of like putting yourself in his shoes, and if he's doing that with you too, to gain understanding that way, when it gets contentious, it's time to decide what to do with it. If it's relentless and there's no understanding coming from both sides, as long as understanding is coming from both sides, it's beneficial.
Yeah,
it's kind of like that agreeing to disagree. So tell me how you feel about that, and you tell him, and then he says something and you say, tell me how you feel about that, or what is that for you, what does that mean to you, or how do you see it, and how do you see it. And as long as it's kept very civil and respectful, there's nothing wrong with that kind of exchange. It's something wonderful to learn from each other.
Yeah, thank
you. As soon as someone starts to demand that you have to be the way they are, that's not respectful. That's not loving. And you may have two different perspectives because you have two different things you have to accomplish in life. Maybe what he feels is right for what he needs to do, and the way you feel is right for where you're going in your development.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you, Henry, for sharing that, because it's really relevant to all of us. And I spoke about the topic of having different languages. I have that topic again and again in my life, that someone thinking and speaking in a different language than I am, in the sense of what they think is right and what works and how I should understand. Like, you know, this idea that I have to understand what they're saying with the few words that they use, right? Or the other way around, I think they should know what I want. The things that I said, I thought I was saying it clearly, right? And this is a big topic. You know, it may not even be a topic of being of different opinions. It may simply be we don't know how to communicate what we're saying to each other so we understand it.
That's true. That's true. There's people who are very visual, and so they have a lot of visual predicates, and there's people who are very audio. So a lot of their things are audio, like, oh, I hear you. That sounds right. Visuals, oh, that looks great. Yeah, I see that. And then there's the people who are kinesthetic. They feel it. Yeah, that feels right. Oh, I sense that, you know. And then there's those that are olfactory, in that, oh, that would be delicious. And so when you start looking at those fine tune things in communication, it's about, well, how do I establish rapport with somebody who's visual? And how do I establish rapport? And you just use their predicates. You listen to
how do
to
I
them.
Establish communication with someone who comes from a totally different background to the same topic that I'm having, right? We may be joined because of a topic. They're coming from somewhere
right.
else. They have totally different knowledge of how to go move through it than I do.
Right. Right.
And we're like speaking to each other and not understanding. We're
because
not understanding.
Yeah.
It's
there's
really odd.
Things.
I have that issue. Really odd, yeah.
It is. There's different faiths and different understandings and different beliefs and whatever they are. Then if you're able to say, hey, I respect where you're at. And if they can do the same thing.
Different methodology, different processes. Different ways of going about things. You know, there's some, it can be as simple as one person likes to plan everything and have it all set in advance.
True.
And the other one has a general idea and then goes into the practice, and then it becomes very clear after by doing it. Right.
And
that's a different approach, right? It's a very different approach, right?
It is. And so allowing each other to be who you are, it's back to being respecting each other for who you are. In my first marriage, I do dishes from left to right. I'm left-handed. And he did dishes from right to left. He's right-handed. And so we just could never meet in the middle. You know? So when he wanted to do dishes, that's fine. Go over the way you want to do it. And I do dishes my way. You do dishes his way. But it's just, how do you come to the point where the issue doesn't become more important than the person? Because as soon as the issue comes more important than the person, then we have a pride issue to work through. And it's like, ouch. And that gets in the way. It really does. So isn't that part of growing? Isn't that part of life? Because I know there's people in the Midwest in the States, and there's people on the West Coast and people in the East Coast, and they all have a different way of acting and interacting and what's acceptable to them and what isn't. And yeah, I, you know, the reason I say that, I was thinking about, I was a waitress in Utah at one time, and we used to get these big tour buses that come in, and they were people from New York, and it got to where we just say, oh no, they're from New York, okay, because that meant we were going to work really hard and we weren't going to get much tip. But that may be just those busloads that were coming through on that tour. Maybe not all New Yorkers are that way, but that was our reaction to the tour buses with New Yorkers on them. So was that really true? I don't know. I don't want to believe that all New Yorkers are that way. So once I make the decision that all New Yorkers are that way, that's my pride. That's my issue. And that's something that something's going to happen, and I'm going to have an opportunity to let go of that somewhere along the line.
Yeah, I love the bringing up of the word pride, because it's also professional pride, or your pride of having done these things and it's working all throughout your life, and then you encounter someone who can't even do it or can't even follow you, and you're like, it's so simple, that's the way it works. This person must be really dumb because they don't get it. They just don't get it.
Yes, I understand. And you're not going to get it until they are open and receptive to learn something different. And then are we open and receptive to allow them to do it in a way they're comfortable with? You know, there's two sides to the same coin.
Yeah, and it's both sides, because you know what, it's always a teaching and learning situation. Actually, like you were saying, the truth is we're walking each other home, and we just don't realize how that works in these situations where we do not approach things the same way.
That's right. And I think of those situations in families where they get bent out of shape because someone does something this way and one does it another way, or someone gets upset because maybe they're not a communicator and the other one likes to talk a lot, and they have challenges. They have challenges to work out. So the non-communicator is like, oh, I got to listen. Or and so they need to learn to speak. They need to learn to say who they are. Well, how do you feel about that? Well, how do you want your eggs? Do you like them scrambled? No? Well, how do you like them? I don't know. You know, well, how do you like them? Or say, I don't, and maybe they just don't like eggs, and they're not willing to say, I don't like eggs, because they're afraid of hurting feelings. So fear, that gets back to what we started with fear. That can we get beyond our fears to be able to allow the love to open up and to shine between us so we can exchange love? Let's open up. Let's exchange love. Let's ask the question. Let's not be afraid to say, oh, did we get our communication mixed up a little bit here? Did I say something? Did I offend you in any way? If I did, I'm sorry. Let's work it out. And the other person may say, oh no, I wasn't offended. And they may say, I just wondered what you wanted to do. Or maybe we decided just to do this instead. And then to come together and say, oh, we had a change of mind. What do you think? Is this something you still want to do with us? Or is this going to work for you? And they say no, then you can go, oh, well, let's really work it. What will work for you and what will work for us? It's about communicating. It's about being willing to open our mouths and not be afraid.
Yeah, and then there's the priority issues, or there's also a lot of pride behind it. I have these priorities, you have those. And it's, why don't you see the same priorities? Aren't they naturally the priority in life?
Yeah. Different strokes.
Yeah.
That's great.
So the idea of coming to a different way of seeing these things, as A Course in Miracles says, you can't change the world, you can only change your mind about the world, is the same with people. Because the whole Course in Miracles is all about people.
Yes, and it's about we're actors and reactors together.
So, yeah, joining and seeing each other as one, right?
Yeah.
It's really a big topic here. So, anyways. So any more questions or comments by anyone here? You just have to press your microphone button, and then I know that you want to speak. Okay, we'll continue then. So we brought up a whole lot of topics, and now we came to the topic of communication. And one of the topics in A Course in Miracles is that the only function of the body is communication. So yeah. That, in other words, if you say the body, you mean the world as well, right? Because the body is the world. So
that's right.
The only function of the world is communication. And the world came about through our separation thoughts.
Right.
So the only way to remember who we are is to change our mind about those, about the separation thoughts, so about the world.
That's right.
And choose thoughts that reestablish the memory of who we are.
Right. I agree. I think that that brings up a memory in me of like being a drop and being a drop in the ocean. And then you go into the ocean and you become a wave. And then you go in past the waves and you become the ocean itself. And so it's learning how to be in union, how to be one with people, and how to flow. You know, how do you flow together? How does love do this? How do we allow it to open? So that we will not be just a drop, we'll be maybe a wave. You know, maybe there's a group of us that'll be a wave. And then maybe there's, if we get the wave and then we go back out into the ocean, then we become part of the whole ocean again. So how do we do that? How do we flow? How do we allow? How do we accept and respect and honor each other for exactly who we are, where we are, and how we do things?
In the manual for teachers, it also speaks about special functions.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the only thing, while we are in the dream, we do have special functions. So that's where A Course in Miracles acknowledges the idea that every single one of us in form in the dream appears to be a totally different individual than everyone else, right? And yet at the same time, we are recognizing that we are one in truth. So in the plan for salvation, there is a special function. So we need to acknowledge that we are, each one of us is unique in that function, not in the purpose. The purpose is the same, to accept the atonement for oneself, right?
Right.
The way we do that is very individual and very personal.
That's great. I love that. Also, in part of my path was realizing that Christ equals love, equals the Word, equals light, equals Christ. And it's just one circle, equals wisdom. And it's just one circle. It goes around and around. It's all the same. And that even though they have separate identities on the outside, when you go to the core of it, it's all one. It's all the same in that circle.
Yeah, and the way from the dream to the happy dream to the truth to reality, it's being awake, is always through the special function. So our being the way you were describing people, they're so beautiful, or the world, how beautiful, how much there is to learn, how much you can grow. That is acknowledging that.
Is that part of why we are here? Is that part of what we've come to do? Is that the core of what we're going to leave with, you know? We have, we've come for a purpose, we've come for reasons, we come to learn and grow and gain knowledge and wisdom. And basically, we can't take our clothes, we can't take our clothes with us, we can't take our houses with us, we can't take the material things that the world tells us are so important. They don't mean anything. They're nothing. They're not real. What's important is the love and the wisdom and what we leave here, what our experience here on earth shares with us when we leave. And we take it back. We take it back to go on to what's next, to go on to something more than here. And something much more and much lighter in the light than here. This is like a quick learn school, I think, because there's so much polarity of light and dark or good and bad, and so many opposites. And in the process, we learn that opposites are really the same. They're two sides of the same coin. And what is that coin? What is that lesson that is sandwiched by the opposites? What's going to happen? We come to understand the opposites and understand why they're there. What's the wisdom that comes out? So, yeah.
Yeah, there's this whole topic of specialness and equality and A Course in Miracles. Mm-hmm. And when I think of the unique nature of our way, we have a function, the special function, it is not affirming that we are special.
The ego
That's the funny thing
special.
About it.
Yeah, the ego does.
So the special the function doesn't make us special.
Yeah. It seems like we each have a choice, don't we? Like when I was dealing with families, and particular with domestic violence and anger, it was a choice. It's a choice of, it's a choice. For instance, if you stop and think for a minute, you remember the last time you got angry. Let me ask you this question. If you think of that anger, where is understanding when you're angry? Is it there? Is it with anger or not? They're opposites. It's there in the sense that it's the opposite and that it's a choice. So when we're angry, we can say, I can choose to understand. What do I need to understand? Right here. In this moment right now, because the person that we may be angry at or the situation we may be angry at is only 10%. That's the teacher. And the 90% is back there. It's from our past. And so what is it? What is the lesson? What am I reacting to? Why am I angry? What's underneath it? And so we may in the middle of an argument and say, just a minute. I need to take 10 minutes. I'll be right back. And you go figure it out and you come back and say, hey, this is what I'm reacting to. And this is what I just figured out. And yeah, I'm upset at you because you presented it, but I'm more upset at that. And then we start.
Course in Miracles, it says there you're never upset for the reason you think you are.
Yeah, exactly. That's a part of what thinking about that, and that is something else. It's something else. The something else is the lesson. And what's that lesson? And okay, if I can get that lesson, this ain't going to come back again, right? Well, maybe in another decade on a deeper level, so you can have a deeper understanding. So it's interesting how that works. That's along going around the medicine wheel. Yeah, we talked about that we seem to go through these patterns in our cycles in life. And that is, we learn to make peace with our past. And then we get to where we want to face our fears, you know, to understand. And then when we begin to face our fears, we go and start to learn the wisdom of our ancestors. And then when we start to do that, we're ready to step into community and start to learn, why am I here? What is my role? What am I doing? What's my purpose? How do I contribute to be a part of this community that I'm part of? And then it goes back again. You know, we may be fulfilling that, and then we go through another cycle of life where we go around that wheel again. And in the middle of that wheel is heart and spirit, and it radiates out. And as the heart and spirit grows, as we go around, each of the lessons we have are deeper, and we become more wise. So it's a path of wisdom. It's a path of going around that wheel to gain wisdom. And it's a good thing. It's a good thing. That's just a model, you know, just a model.
Okay, go ahead, Henry.
So I've been looking at a lot of the same ideas as you have with anger. And there was one thing I wanted to share with that, and which Wanako mentioned, was that we are delusioned by what we think we're angry about. So if that's true, then the next part of that equation for me, which I've used very much, is, oh, okay. I'm thinking I'm upset for this reason, so I'm going to look at it now. Like there has to be a step back. There has to be a something that says, okay, I don't really want to be angry in this moment. I see I am. I'm going to allow that stuff, but I'm also going to be looking at it. And then there's an openness. It's a sort of prying something that's really tight and. And that's what anger feels like, really tight. And so it's opening, it's asking, like, please help me look at this a little different, because I'm thinking I'm pissed off for this reason or that reason, but I know that that's not right. So I'm going to find it. Please help me find it. So I ask my guides, and I have been so surprised about to find out sometimes what I've actually been. Like you were saying, sometimes it's stuff that goes way back, but sometimes I'm actually angry at a person because I'm angry that the situation that this world is in is that people don't understand each other, and I'm just, for some reason, I'm just furious that I'm in that situation. But who put me there? It's kind of like that. It's like I'm blaming my ancestors, I'm blaming my my guides, but I have to come into the awareness that I can't be doing it that way. That kind of anger I will never get out. I won't. And this is what my guides were showing me. And that's pretty exciting.
It is. And I like that you put the ancestors in there, because actually you're the chain breaker. If you are doing this work, you're looking at that anger, you're looking at how to get through it and move through it and what to do about it. The ancestors before you were not as successful, and it's come to you to break the chain and release them.
Okay, I wasn't expecting you were going to say that, and here's what I'm going to make public. I had a lifetime as an Indian in Canada, long, long before. Are you Indian from background, Cherokee or something?
I have some, yes. I do. I am, let's see, I'm European and Asian and Native from Yaqui, but also... my people came from China and the Middle East, and they came across the Pacific, and they landed in Ecuador and Peru. And then they went all the way and they migrated north. So I'm related to the group that migrated north and became the Yaqui in Durango area and also in Sonora, Mexico. And also to, that's one third of them. And the other two thirds went to the Plains, it became the Plains Indians. And then a fraction of them went north and became the Nez Perce. So that's my lineage, my Aboriginal lineage on my mom's side. I think I had the DNA done. Let me remember the percentage. I'm 17.5%. I can give you the exact number, but it comes from my mama's side. And my grand, and you know, her dad and her mom both have Native and then also Spanish and French. So I'm really a mixture. I'm a Heinz 57.
Okay.
Thank you for asking. I appreciate that.
Press the mic again.
Here we go. Can you hear me okay? Greetings. Yeah. I was just thinking about the discussion about anger, and what was coming up for me was to ask if you had any experiences in terms of your work and working with other people in terms of anger when it comes to physical attack, when it's so strong on the surface, because it seems like it's so, like what's behind that seems like it's deeper than what's just on the surface, because it seems like it in is. A certain way, like it's very hard to see that, you know, like just looking at it on a surface level, it's like, well, yeah, I just got punched and, you know, I'm angry about it, you know, but do you have any examples through your work of?
I can talk a little bit about that if you will. What happens when somebody is violent is that they have gone through violence themselves and it's unresolved. And it, when their anger comes out, they feel out of control, they feel helpless, they feel threatened, and they're swinging to protect themselves. They're swinging to protect their ego. They're swinging, some of them, to not be in danger because they were once in a lot of danger. What makes me think is there's a lot of physical child abuse from parents to a son or a daughter, and they're flinchy. They are in some, and their egos are very fragile. And when they feel threatened, they come up swinging. Or when they're cornered, they come up swinging. Or if they have been beat a lot, they're the bullies at school. They're the bullies in life.
So in my situation, I've worked through a lot of anger, and it's pointed, it's because my son would attack me from a very young age. He would attack me and his mother, very violent at times, very, very big outbursts. And so in that situation, you know, I mean, he was raised with love, and, you know, his brother isn't like that. And it's interesting, and it's, right. You know, it makes me get into areas of genetics and like the whole things along with that, and brain chemistry. And but in terms of me, like when he would attack me, I would be angry. This anger would come out of me that seemed just like a defensiveness in a certain way. Would you say that that's like something that's pointing
some
to, like,
people believe in past lives and that the anger comes forward? Also, it can be partly genetic. If there was violence in the past in either side of your family or your mother's family, sometimes it can be a lack of understanding and a frustration on his part, and he's lashing out. sometimes it's not understanding, communicating, you know, being able to communicate. Sometimes kids, toddlers especially, when they're young, will lash out because they're frustrated. They can't speak. They can't say what's on their mind. And the emotionality is really strong. And I can't give you advice not knowing your son or knowing your situation, but you can ask and talk to a professional about someone who knows you, or go in with someone if he's still having this anger and the violence and work with him. These kind of situations, I don't suggest working online. I suggest working face to face.
Well, we've had, we had changes, and it's medication has seemed to make the difference for him right now. He hasn't had an outbreak for 7 months or like that. But I was speaking more to the anger that came up for me or in other situations, you know, like what would that, it seems like almost like a survival type of anger or something like that, you know?
Yes, it can be that.
And to me, I guess it was just an opportunity to look at that. And the more I looked at it and the more it happened, the easier it got not to be reactive.
Good.
But to respond. And ultimately, it was really, a lot of it was driven by just a need for safety, like physical safety in a certain way.
Yes.
So it seemed like for a while that the appropriate response was like on a physical level at a certain point, but then it also pointed deeper than that in terms of my own growth and reactiveness and controlling reactiveness in a certain way, you know.
Right. Nutrition helps. Make sure your nutrition is good. You know, when you think of the whole body, the body, mind, spirit, heart, they're all connected. So if you're meeting your physical needs, then it makes it easier on your mental health needs. And it also makes it easier on the spiritual and the heart needs, you know, the relationships. So when a person's nutrition is down, their moods could be down, they could feel more anxious, they could be more depressed, if they're not getting all the vitamins and minerals and amino acids that they need. So that's something when you work with your person that you're working with, to kind of talk to them about the holistics and what needs to happen to balance the body in those areas. And if there's any blocks, then you can get in and get some Reiki work done or do some energy healing helps, if that's something you're open to. Also, changing, noticing how you think and noticing what you're thinking when you're angry. Is there blame going on? Is it, I'm looking for safety, like you had said, and understand what's at the core of that anger. Because when you understand the core of that anger, then you can ask, well, what do I need to understand about this? What am I ready to know about this? Because you can't go in and open all of the abuse or all the situations you've been through at once, because you'll overload yourself. The situation with the heart and the mind and the body is just to open up what you're ready for and really trust that process. I hope that's helpful.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, it's time to wrap up. So thank you, Kaya. It was a great conversation. And I think there's a lot more to unwrap, but we're not going to do it today.
Okay, and thank you.
So thank you once again so much for joining in this Walking Each Other Home that this whole endeavor is about.
And you bet.
Yeah, if someone wants to reach out to you, how can they do that?
They can send an email to inspirit.om@gmail.com.
Wonderful. Okay. Yes. So thank you once again. Thank you everyone for being here, for joining us on this journey home together. And yeah, please subscribe to the podcast, share the word, review it, and let people know about it, because I have the impression there's so many people who would like to know about it and don't. So please do that. And if you want to be a guest on the podcast, please reach out to me so I can schedule something with you. So blessings to you all. Until next time.